We've got some more informational work going on today. We'll start hearing some bills Wednesday. And I'm going to cut right to the chase and ask Erin Kelly Seal to come up. She's got an appointment here very soon, and so we're going to give her the advantage of getting started as quick as possible.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair. Sure. My name is Erin Kelly Seal, and I'm really just here to introduce myself today. I am the Governor's Policy Advisor on Health and Human Services. People have been saying, are you Pam Curtis or are you Mark Gibson? Well, I'm basically both of them in one. And I just want to, Marjorie asked me to kind of summarize some of the governor's overall policy goals relating to human services, and I'm afraid I might be a big disappointment in that regard right now because we're obviously in the very early phases of the administration and formulating ideas. But I did want to talk a little bit about just kind of who I am, where I come from. I'm sure you're all looking at me thinking, who is this person? And also just kind of my vision and hope for a really strong working relationship with all of you as we work through the tough issues that are facing us this session. I just briefly have some background in human services, but most of that was in Texas and not in Oregon. And so I am coming at this from the perspective of a learner in many, many ways. And when I was working in Texas, my focus really was on issues relating to child welfare, but I do have some background in other issues as well that relate directly to services provided by the department. Governor Kulongoski when he was a justice. That's how he and I met, and we used to talk about these issues together quite frequently. And the other message that I really want to bring today is I think there's been some I've heard it said in the rumor mill that these issues are not important to the governor, and I want to tell you now that they are very important to the governor. He is thinking about them. We are working on them, and we are talking about them quite actively, and I just wanted to let you all know that we are watching and we are working. Before coming here, I'm an attorney by trade, and I worked for Stoll Reeves in the field of energy law. So what that has prepared me is for in this regard is just the study of industry and the study of partnership between industry and the state and how regulation plays into all that. So I appreciate your patience with me as I work my way through this system, and I look forward to working with you. My style is very similar to that of the governor. I like to work collaboratively. I have an open door. I want to invite all of you to call me anytime and ask questions of me. And I just really hope that our relationship can be one that is open and without surprises and with a lot of communication. I think when you see the policies that will come from our office, they will be reflective and shaped by the four policies that the governor announced in his inaugural address. The first of those being that children are one of the governor's top priorities, and I want to clarify that this is not to the exclusion of other groups. It's merely a recognition by the governor that investment in children benefits all of Oregon. And so that's one of the guiding principles that we're going to be following. The second is rebuilding the economy. I think this is important, especially in this area, because the revenue critical to providing services that are critical to Oregon's most vulnerable citizens depends upon our state having a strong and healthy economy. Restoring Oregonians' faith in government and demonstrating that we're capable of living within our means and spending money wisely. And finally, related to the former, business as usual in the state is over, and that's really about just examining where we are and what we can do better. And I appreciate any input that you all have in that regard as well, especially as it relates to these issues. One of the things that I'm focusing on in particular right now as we're facing these crises is just preservation of infrastructure and how we will be able to rebuild once we achieve the goal, hopefully, of moving forward from where we are now. And so that's just a little bit about me and where I'm coming from. And if you have any questions, I may not be able to answer them at this point, but I'm more than willing to come back or talk again to you anytime.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome back from a hot place into the hot seat. Any questions? I find we more than likely will be wanting to have you come and weigh in on some of the issues that we face here through the course of the session. So thank you much for giving us your time, and we'll hurry you on to your next appointment.
Thank you for having me, and I hope to be able to meet with each of you individually. I'm in the process of having those meetings scheduled, so if you hear from Grace is working for me temporarily, Grace Roth, who worked for Pam Curtis previously, and Evelyn Blumhardt is my permanent assistant who's on vacation, so you'll likely be hearing from one of them soon, so hopefully we can have some time to talk one-on-one. So thank you very much, Chair Fisher.
Thank you. Now we'll go to Gene Thorne, the Director of the Department of Human Services. I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep this straight, because it seems like I know more and go from the Committee on Human Resources to the Committee on Health and Human Services, and now back to the Committee on Human Resources, and you've gone the other way over there, and so I'll try to keep these names straight, but don't hold me to it have a slip of the tongue here occasionally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have been known to do that myself. I'm Jean Thorne. I'm the Director of the Department of Human Services, and yes, I have said resources occasionally because I have been in and out of the department since 1976. I understand that your focus today, or your area of interest that you wanted to talk with me about, relates to the reorganization of the Department of Human Services, where we may be on that, the charge we have from the governor, what we may be doing over the coming months. I understand that Gary Weeks was here last week. I wasn't able to listen, but I said, "What did you say anyway?" And he said, I told him what the governor had asked me to do, and that is to take a look to see whether or not we need to take any mid-course corrections in reorganization. This is a huge organization, the largest organization in state government. And so what I'd like to do today is talk with you some, perhaps frame it very briefly in a very brief DHS 101. But I've been in this job for a little less than a month. But I do have some thoughts, some observations, some concerns, some questions that I think we need to pay attention to. And when I say the we, it's the we within the Department of Human Services, and also perhaps some of them are things that we may need to do with your assistance as well. I have had a long history in the department. When I started there in 1976, it was on a 3-month temporary. I'm still around. And at that time, it was to start up the Indo-Chinese refugee program. But I moved probably a bit later in the 70s to actually working with the various programs out in the field to have the managers of the various programs and divisions work more closely together. And this is just a few years after the department began as a department. And so I know that over the years we have struggled in trying to figure out how to better integrate services to clients. How could we do a better job with the vision that was there when the Department of Human Resources was first formed? I did return to the department in October as the interim administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs. So although I've been in this position for less than a month, I have a whole 4 months worth of more recent background. What I would like to do today is frame the discussion within the context of what DHS does and how we do it, what the goals were of the reorganization, what the governor has asked us to look at, the process we're using to try to answer some of those questions, and the observations, concerns, and questions I may have, how I see the reorganization fitting within the other work that we have to do over the coming months. I know all of you have been in the legislature for quite a while, but sometimes I find it helps just to be reminded a little bit of what it is that either a program or an agency does. And so we do have, this seems to be getting revised daily, but we do have an overview here. I would like to use some pieces of that. We do overall provide services to a variety of people in vulnerable situations, and then we also have population-based services, whether it's prevention or some of the services of our public health organization. If you turn to page 12 We have, our services really fall into, I'd say, three broad policy areas: children, adults, and families, seniors, and people with disabilities, and health services. And so within children, adults, and families, we have what would basically be self-sufficiency services and child welfare services, primarily those that were in the former Adult and Family Services Division and services to children and families. In seniors and people with disabilities, primarily services around long-term care. So actually our Medicaid long-term care program is administered out of that part of the department. So whether it's nursing facility services, substitute care, in-home services for the elderly and persons with disabilities, specifically also services, group homes, and community supports for persons with developmental disabilities. And this part of the department really encompasses the former Senior and Disabled Services Division, and also the Developmental Disabilities Services portion of the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Services Division. No wonder I can't quite remember all of this. Health services includes the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, which administers the Oregon Health Plan, the Medically Needy Program, and premiums for assistance and paying premiums for low-income Medicare recipients, public health programs, and also mental health and addiction services programs. And these in the past were part of, again, the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, the former health division, the mental health part of the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, and the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs. We have then the services. We have a field structure that Community Human Services that carries out those services that are administered by state employees. But we also have, even though much of our operations are provided through county-based or locally-based organizations, we do have, as a state agency, overall responsibility for management of all of these programs. If you turn to page 28, there are actually some charts here that are for our 0305 budget, but are in terms of proportions are probably fairly similar to what we have in 0103. Page 28 actually gives a sense of where the money goes that the department spends, and over 80% of it actually is at in payments, whether it's payments to counties, individual providers, nonprofit providers, medical providers, client grants, food stamps. So most of what is paid out through the department, it does go out in direct payments. We have another 16% that would be in services, direct services to clients or population-based services, and also including our state-operated, such as the state hospital, state-operated group homes, and then a little over 4% in administration of our programs. Page 27, about 26.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know if you want us to hold questions, Leanne, or
I don't have any particular personal preference. I guess I'd leave it more to Jean. Mm-hmm. She wants to handle them as she goes according to the things, or try to come back to them.
Yep. Why don't we try it with the questions?
All right. Senator Brown.
Thanks. And Jean, I just have not been in any on this committee before, so some of this is new to me, other than sort of piecemeal stuff that I've gotten other places. On the dollars that go directly to local communities, I assume those are county payments. Is there any kind of oversight or any kind of accountability that the state has in working with the counties to ensure that those dollars are going to the services that we want them to be going to?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, I certainly hope so. We do have contractual relationships with counties around the various programs that may be county administered, and then would have some oversight responsibilities beyond that. I think it may, you know, if there's a specific question about a specific program, maybe we could spend some more time talking about that. But we have our mental health services operates for counties. Health, okay, that's as far as you want to go at this point? Okay, we'll stop right there. Page 27, our budget, about 26% of our budget is general fund. But I think what's interesting is when you look inside that, almost 70% of that money is tied up with match for federal funds or federal maintenance of effort requirements. So we are driven very much by what the federal government either allows us to do or prohibits us from doing. And so as we've gone, and I wasn't coming today to go through the budget cuts, which at a later time, if you'd like to, I can, or if you'd like to do that later today, I could do that as well. But we are driven very much by what the federal government allows us to do. There are certain constraints. And so even though it is the largest agency in state government and has a sizable amount of general fund, much of that, again, is tied up with federal requirements. Let me spend some time now then talking about that. That was your DHS 101, so I hope you're already, if you need graduate level courses, we can move on to those at a later time.
Just one question. You went over your hierarchy of assignments here with the different things. I don't see actually, is OMAP now under Barry Cast?
Yes, that's correct. And I'll get onto the organization chart here.
So you're going to do more of that? All
yes,
right,
I will. The goal and the organization chart is on page 10. You'll see the old and the new. The goals of reorganization, the primary focus of reorganization was on how can we better integrate services to clients. And I think that, people have said, do you support service integration? Well, of course I support service integration. If we have in fact had situations where clients are going to different offices to receive a set of benefits or have conflicting case plans, that doesn't make sense. We need to figure out how do we take the programs that we are charged with running and put them together from a client standpoint to have the best effect on clients' lives. The secondary focus was on savings or efficiencies. As you can see, we've gone from an organization with lots of boxes to an organization that has somewhat fewer boxes. And in doing that, we have found some ways, which I'll talk about briefly, to allow us to have some savings and efficiencies and consistencies. Originally, in the 2001 session, the department, as I understand it, at that point had said they felt they could find $10 million of savings in reorganization. $4 million of that was taken immediately. So in the legislatively approved budget, there was $4 million taken from reorganization. And then the remaining $6 million was going to be used for reinvestment into training, computer systems, facilities that would assist in service integration. Much of that has also been taken in subsequent special sessions or reductions that have occurred in the budget. And so I think we have about $3 million that's actually been reinvested in training and computer systems. This reorganization moved very quickly, and it took 30 years to build this organization, and there have been a number of changes over the years. And so the governor asked when he asked me to take on this assignment of being the director of the department to do a mid-course evaluation to see where are we. Are we accomplishing what we had hoped we would accomplish? Basically, there's three questions as I see it. What's working? What are we finding out there that really is working and that we need to continue to support and push forward? What could work, but perhaps we need to put some additional supports in place, whether it's decision-making processes, communication linkages? And where is it that we may need to rethink what we're doing in terms of reorganization? We need to consolidate the gains and determine where we need to make some mid-course corrections. Now, kind of where do I stand on this, I guess, personally, and what are the processes that we'll use to try to answer some of these questions, and then what are some of my observations? Yes, I support service integration. But at the same time, service integration is not the same thing as reorganization, and co-location is not the same thing as service integration. And so we need to be careful that if our primary focus really is service integration, that we don't get mixed up in terms of what is it that will lead to better service integration. I don't intend to propose going back to the old organization structure, the one that's on the bottom of page 10. I'm sure there are probably plenty of people who would like to go back to the old organization structure. I know I kind of knew that organization structure, and so I was comfortable with it. And I knew if I had a question about estate recoveries, where to go in the organization. I don't especially know that now, and so I myself have to have a cheat sheet in terms of, okay, where is this function now? But I think that we need to be careful and saying that the old organization, it's always the grass is always greener on the other side. The old organization structure had flaws as well. Actually, over the years I've been in and out of human services, I've seen a number of different plans for a reorganization of the department, have been part of creating different possible plans for reorganization. When as you may know, I spent the last 5 years as Governor Kitzhaber's education advisor, so I wasn't really paying much attention to what was going on with the DHS reorganization. But I know when someone drew on the board, here's the new organization, I said, I think that was our 1989 plan. No matter how you move the boxes, you are, although you may be linking together programs or services that should have natural linkages, you're also perhaps separating yourself from a link that you had before. So there is no perfect organizational structure. There are organizational structures that can be helpful or get in the way. But I also believe it's the people in those boxes that are a good portion of making an organization work. It's the commitment, it's the willingness of people to try to make those linkages. So, in looking at those three questions, what's working well, and let's keep supporting that, what could work well, but we may need some additional work, and what do we need to rethink? I've started with individual conversations with the cabinet members, the members who are the assistant directors in the department, to get their own sense, because almost all of them have been through the reorganization, and I wasn't. What was it that was envisioned, and how do they think it's working from their perspective? We have many, many advisory groups in the department, whether statutory or informal. And we are going to ask all of those advisory groups, if they so desire, to send us their answers to those three questions over the coming months, to take some time at an upcoming meeting that they may have to really focus on what's working well, what could work well, and what needs to be rethought. We want to set up ways for staff to provide their own individual input of, again, that how they would respond to those questions, and that can be through email linkages. We have labor management committees. Continue to have informal discussions with people who have an involvement with the department or concerns about the department. And also looking for input from all of you, other legislators who have questions or concerns about where we may be headed. Basically, what I'm trying to do is get input without creating another task force. We have plenty of task forces and advisory groups, and given the work that we have before us over the coming months, we don't have a lot of time to set up new structures. We should use the structures we have to try to get at some of those answers. So what are some of my observations now that I've been there a whole month, plus 3 months? First of all, recognizing this is a huge organization, and you don't turn it around overnight. It takes time. We have about 9,500 employees throughout the state. What are the things that I've noticed or have heard from Cabinet as being some consistent themes of what are some things that are working well. I think we have, certainly in some of our administrative functions, by bringing together our personnel functions, by bringing together our contracting functions, we either have or are now seeing more consistency and more efficiencies in our practice. Having been in the organization in the past, I can tell you that when you have seven different personnel shops, you may have seven different ways of classification, seven different ways of applying discipline. We have much more consistency in how we deal with those issues now. We had had, and there was an audit released, Secretary of State's audit released a couple of months ago on our contracting functions, and it was a pre-centralization and a lot of criticisms. But within that, also saying that they have seen, since we've moved to having a central contracting function, that there's more consistency, and a lot of the legal concerns that were there that they had are being addressed now because we have people who do this as a that's their full-time job to make sure we're doing this correctly. I think generally we're seeing that staff have more knowledge of the other programs and other services that are in the department that may affect clients. I think our policy offices have generally pulled together programs that have made sense for them to work more closely together, such as mental health and chemical dependency. Those actually were together back, I believe, in the early 80s, were pulled apart and are brought back together now because many clients have both mental health and chemical dependency issues. So let's not treat them as completely two separate issues. Pulling together services for seniors, persons with disabilities and developmental disabilities as we look at a continuum of supports, residential and in-home services. I think anecdotally I am hearing that some good things are going on out in the field, movement towards more multidisciplinary staffing and case planning. Again, I think it's kind of the beginnings that we're seeing of some of this. But now I have a number of concerns. The sense I have is that we got rid of the old infrastructures, including the processes to get work done, without really fully developing some of the new infrastructures. I'll use as an example, I think we need to better link some of our support functions, such as budgeting and information technology, with our programs. We don't want to move away from having program silos to having function silos. Budget and IT should be there to support program, not to drive program. So we need to make sure that we have the decision-making processes or the communication processes in place so that, for instance, the OMAP administrator doesn't come over here and find a new set of numbers that she's never seen before. So we need to, although we have, I think, more consistency in how we deal with some of those support functions, we need to make sure they are there to support our programs and our services and not vice versa. I think we need to also make sure that by creating these new program linkages, we still are linking across. We're still doing horizontal linkages to some of the other clusters, for instance. I know, having been back at OMAP, although we are in the health cluster, that much of what we do links into the one that's for seniors and persons with disabilities. So we need to make sure we don't create new silos, but make sure that we are actually creating those linkages. I'm concerned, and I don't have an answer to this, that the structure encourages accountability to flow up rather than flow down. And having spent 3 months, a big 3 months, back in OMAP, I know when there are systems issues that where the priorities for what's going on in information technology are being driven by someone else, and yet providers aren't getting their payments or clients aren't getting their cards, and it's a systems issue, but I'm not in a position to influence or direct the work of the information technology section, who is it that's held accountable? My concern is with the structure. I'm concerned that the only person who really can be held accountable is the director. as the director, I'd like there to be other people to be able to be held accountable through the organization. And so that is something we need to figure out. How can we assure that the program managers and field managers actually have sufficient authority so they can be held accountable?
May I ask a question,
Senator Morse?
The best accountability that Services to Children and Families has right now is with the legislative liaison person, Mickey Cerise, who I call when I have a problem, and he will immediately get back to the person that I ask him to get back to. If someone's having a problem, he gets what their problem is. And then he lets me know where the problem originated, and sometimes it's with the organization and sometimes not. I think that is wonderful, and I can't say enough about what he does, and I just hope that we have more of that kind of model out there.
Have some other Mickey clones around.
Oh, well, the biggest problem that people have is not being able to get an answer to their question. And this way, you know, we can cut through it, but we don't know who necessarily to go to. But I think Mickey performs a wonderful service. Pass that along, please.
Okay.
But
I hope he's
clone
more.
Him. Do more of that with the other parts of it.
I am especially concerned. We have these three policy offices, and then we have a field office. How do we make sure we've got connections between our policy and program and our field? How do we know that the field is carrying out the policy as intended? How can the field provide the feedback to the policy offices of what's working and what isn't working? I'm very concerned about this because if you have you need to make sure those linkages are there, and I'll talk in a minute about what I'm at least trying to do initially to address some of those concerns. I've been concerned with the structure of the community human services, the field structure, whether or not child welfare is getting enough direction, supervision, and support. I see already one head shaking, and I know there are other heads shaking. Child welfare, actually, I did work in child welfare for 3 months once, and it doesn't show up on my resume anywhere, but I've been around the department. But I recognize that the work that's done in child welfare is different than the work that may be done in self-sufficiency. There certainly are linkages, but when we are talking about the lives of children that are at stake, we need to recognize that we need to have adequate supervision and support for those staff. And I've had concerns, I've heard concerns, and I have concerns about whether or not in the structure child welfare is getting the sufficient support and direction. I think my biggest concern, and I was really been very surprised by this, staff throughout the organization seem afraid to speak up and to identify what their concerns are, their ideas are. And I was very surprised when I came back to the department and saw it's throughout the department. And although I recognize that to do an organization or reorganization of this magnitude means we really need to push and push the envelope, staff need to feel empowered to be able to express their concerns. I'm not naive enough to think that you can get 9,500 people plus all of the other stakeholders, including the legislature, all to come to consensus on what the right organizational structure might be. On the other hand, we need to make sure that as we go down a path, whatever the path is in a program or in an organization, that we really understand the implications. And if staff feel that they are not permitted to speak up, that is very dangerous in an organization of this size and this complexity and given the work that we do. Some of the questions I have, I'm not sure how far along we are on the ground in integrating. These are some of the things that I need to get a better sense of through these various processes. What are some of our best practices, and how do we spread or encourage those? How do we balance our desire for integration with the need for specialization? There are specialized functions and services that are provided that need specialized training. So how do we keep the necessary specialization while still finding how we integrate and make those linkages. And lastly, I think one of my questions is, are all the services that we provide really candidates for organizational or for reorganization or for integration? There may be services that more likely a given family would be using or a given client might be using. Should we really try to mush everything together into one structure? Or do we end up with a facility that, it was interesting in talking with some people, they felt where some of our best successes are in small communities where you only have a few staff involved in one function or another. When they come together, co-located, it's much easier for clients to access services and for the staff to know what the other services are. But if what you're doing is bringing together in a building 500 staff as co-location and assuming that by itself makes service integration happen, that may not be a very inviting or friendly way. And so I think we may need to look more closely at which ones are more ripe for integration than others. This last month, I've taken a couple of actions to hopefully begin to address the concerns that I have on the top of my priority list, and especially the first action being the connection between our policy in our field and also the role that child welfare or the supervision and support for child welfare. And so Ramona Foley, who has been the assistant director over the policy office here for children, adults, and families, have made management changes in our field structure and have asked her to play a dual role over the coming months and to also act as the acting assistant director over community human services. Specifically, I'm asking her to look at how do we not only better link children, adults, and families in our field, and frankly, most of our field, that is the area that is primarily state employees, is in the self-sufficiency and child welfare arenas, but also how do we link between that and our seniors and persons with disabilities and our health services. Now, I've had people suggest right off the bat, just merge children, adults, and families, and community human services. But I'm not ready to do that either, because there are within the community human services, you have some pieces of our service delivery system for seniors and persons with disabilities. We have our vocational rehabilitation service delivery system as well. So just as I wouldn't want to jump quickly into a reorg. I don't want to do a reorg to turn around and do another reorganization. But I have asked Ramona specifically to look at how can we better link this? How can we provide better support over child welfare? The other thing, which really gets back, I think, at the concerns about staff being afraid to speak up, I am trying to set a tone within the organization that we want you to speak up. We want to encourage the sharing of ideas, whether it's with the staff, whether it's with our partners. I've had a number of people who have said we've been afraid to. We've basically been told not to. That's not healthy. And so we are setting up processes. It's got to be something better than an email to me, because I've been getting a lot of emails, and we are working on something to allow staff some more immediate input. But I think that is a huge change for the department, which may be something that's subtle. But again, given the work that we have, especially with the reductions that are before us over the coming months, I think staff need to feel they have an opportunity to speak. I also believe we need to move quickly on at least establishing some decision-making processes of how do our budget and our information technology functions better link in with our program and policy shops. And especially it's going to be a real challenge, especially on the budget side, during the session, because I know we need to be able to respond quickly to legislator questions and concerns, but we need to make sure we're responding accurately as well. And given the amount of uncertainty that we're all experiencing now, it will be important that we focus on that. So what do I see as the role of reorganization, given the work that we have at hand? We have an enormous amount of business to get done over the coming months, both with 0103 reductions, and even if Measure 28 passes, we still have $50 million worth of general fund reductions we're taking in the last 5 months of the biennium. And then as we approach 0305, we can't let reorganization get in the way of getting the work done that we have at hand. At the same time, in discussions I've had with our field managers, if there are changes that they're working on that make sense, that make it easier, more efficient, and more effective to provide services to clients, well, don't stop if it makes sense to go ahead and do that. Lastly, I think that the actions that come out of the 2003 legislature, including the final budget, in many ways may have a big influence on how our organization needs to look. We have the governor's balanced budget has very significant reductions in the funding for the Oregon Health Plan. There are significant reductions in mental health and other areas that are kind of a continuation of the cuts for the House Bill 5100. That means I've asked our cabinet, there are certain areas where we need to step back with our partners and with you to really examine how we do our work. And in the end, what we know we're going to have fewer services to fewer people. Is there a way we can organize that so that the impacts are not as adverse as they might otherwise be? And given however that is organized, that by itself then may influence what our organization needs to look at. So in summary, I would say I don't want to move any more boxes for right now. We have made some changes in management and some changes that I hope will address some of the more immediate concerns. We are working on processes to gather the concerns and gather the ideas as we are undertaking our other work. So that's for any of you, it's been interesting as I started some different, whether legislative committees or other groups have said, I've got concerns about such and such. And in many cases, so do I. And so I do hope that over the coming months, we can be spending some time also talking about how we might have an organization in the end that really does do the best job we can within the resources we have of providing services in an integrated fashion to clients.
Senator Morissette.
Thank you. I'm not as concerned about moving boxes as I am about opening them. I don't know how far into the reorganization you have gotten. How about staffing? Have you eliminated staffing? To what extent have you eliminated staff in anticipation of some of these changes?
Mr. Chair and Senator Morissette, we've had a number of, and I don't have all of my budget stuff with me, unfortunately. We've had, I believe, over 100 and some positions that have actually been eliminated. Now, much of that may be tied to, it's hard anymore to say which of this is reorganization, which of these are just pure budget cuts. We have another 200 or 300 that are due to be eliminated, depending on what happens over the coming months. And we're holding about 800 vacancies, freezing them for now. And so we have been able to find efficiencies as we pulled together some of the functional support areas, and have been able to eliminate staff. In some cases, it's maybe eliminating more than we might otherwise prefer to do, but that because of the budget reductions, we've tried to do that.
Okay. May I follow? Yes. What's the normal vacancy? Holding vacancies in any given year. I mean,
because
you're going to always
have some
vacancies.
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris said, I'm not sure. I'll need to get back.
But 800 is more than the normal, right?
Oh, definitely, yes. Okay. We've I think we're about 300. I want to say 200 to 300 where we are holding because we expect those to be abolished. The others we are holding either to get savings that we're due to get for some of these various actions, or also even where we have approved filling of positions. Right now, we are holding some of them so that if with the bumping and layoff process that people potentially could bump in there. But I'll need to get back to you with what our normal vacancy rate is.
Good. Thanks.
Senator Flannel.
Thank you. Gina, I just wanted to, excuse me, congratulate you on your change of direction and encouraging ideas and staff to. I think that hasn't been the case, and staff's been a little reluctant to say anything, and I think that's a good change.
Thank you.
Can I?
Yes.
Can I ask how you're going to do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, I mean, one thing that it's amazing what email can do. There's a weekly message that I send out to the 9,500 employees, except I found it goes to a lot more than the 9,500 employees, because there are all sorts of other people that I read about this. Really within that, which sets both a tone for line staff and for their managers, that we want to encourage not only provision of input but feedback to that input as well. And we had discussion this morning about setting up a special email box where we would have someone staff to really get the ideas, figure out because part of it is figure out where do you send this idea if you do have that idea. But I think it's important that staff not think that their ideas go into a black hole.
Do you acknowledge and reward by acknowledgement people who have good ideas?
Mr. Chair and Senator Morissette, there actually, you know, there has been a state employee suggestions program for a number of years where employees can actually get monetary rewards if they find that if their idea achieves savings. And I think we want to reiterate that process is out there, but that's also a fairly formal process, and so want to encourage people informally as well. But I think certainly one of the things I would like to do is, as we get those ideas, is be able to acknowledge where those ideas came from. And sometimes there are ideas that are being shared with me while I'm at the grocery store, so it's always a question of whether I have anything to write those ideas down on.
Okay, I guess that handles the questions up to this point in time. Are you more or less wrapped up then?
I have wrapped up as much as I have right now. I don't know if there are other issues you wanted me to speak on. Or?
Well, I have a question. Mm-hmm. As you know, I was the Senate co-chair of the Audit Committee during the interim. Yeah, when I got done, I felt like I had about 17 cases of ammunition, but no gun to use it on or with. And that's kind of a frustrating feeling. In some instances, I felt that the audit information had made an impression upon the particular agency, and that things were being put into process even before we got a chance to have the hearings in the audit committee over the audits, which pleases me. Others were not quite so quickly established, and there were some changes made here more or less recently that working on some of them. But I was really, really disturbed when we had the audit report on the contract services. And number one, as I stated in the audit committee, to have 15% of contracts basically messed up in either the paying or the receiving, to have I think it was 28%, nearly a third, to not be documented properly in the files. Having dealt with government agencies and government contracts and things like that, and having to have contracts in my business to present and to be audited and looked at by the state, I know that there's no way under the sun that I could have been impressed them very much if I'd have said, well, you know, I've got 85% of my collections here right, and only 15% may have a little problem with them. Or if I would have said, only 28% of my contracts aren't up to date or fully documented, I would not have expected to have much of an audience with that kind of an answer. And that disturbs me. And I was extremely concerned after the first week after that committee when I got four responses, two of them that were willing to sign their names on the paper saying that indeed there was those problems and that basically we've been fed a lot of baloney in the audit committee. And one was an anonymous phone call that I discussed at length with someone. And basically everyone that conferred with me on that indicated that that was about what their jobs were worth, as if they anyone found out that they had. But as I said, two of them were ready and wrote it on paper and were ready to testify and go to bat for what they had written. The other one was a person who identified themselves, but again requested that the information not be made public. It wasn't born yesterday. You know, I know that sometimes people will say things as long as they know won't be made public, and perhaps it's not necessarily the straight scoop, but to have within a week four responses that were basically all in the same vein bothered me. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't know exactly how to work under the previous administrative setup on something like that.
Mr. Chair, if you wouldn't mind, what I would like to do is either talk with you personally or have Clyde Psyche, who's our Chief Administrative Officer, talk with you about what you were hearing from people.
It basically was exactly what was in the audit, only it was specific instances and the fact that, indeed, it wasn't necessarily being corrected like that at the time being put into corrective action as it was discussed to us in the audit committee by the department.
Mr. Chair, let me go back and spend some time talking. I've seen the audit. I think it was done last fall. And I did see that even within the Secretary of State's audit that they had acknowledged that by consolidating our contracts work and we had established processes that I'll never say are going to be 100%, but I would hope could get close to 100% of not having errors occur. Partly of what we are dealing with, though, is also figuring out what is still the responsibility of the program around contract administration. What we've done is by pulling together the contract staff is try to make sure we have trained staff who know what do we need to do in terms of documentation, in terms of doing requests for proposals, and establishing the systems that allow us to see this contract is either close to exceeding authority or it's close to the end of the timing of the termination of the contract. So we're trying to set up those processes at the same time as also have some training for the staff who are in the programs who actually have to then oversee the contracts. Let me go back and talk with my staff more about specifically the audit and what they are seeing is getting followed up on and what isn't. And I think we generally need to do a better job of being able to come back and respond down the road on these various audits of here were the findings and what have we done or not. Not particular in this audit, but I know there have been other audits on other functions of the department where the bottom line is it may cost more money because it may require additional staff to undertake whatever corrective action may be necessary. And so I think then we always are dealing with do we add more staff to review knowing that that is more costly or it always is a balance, and I've seen that certainly over the years. But we need to be able to document for you how we have followed up, and if we haven't followed up on a specific recommendation, why we didn't. And I think that's something we need to do.
One of the arenas that might not have been really zeroed in on in the audit was the computer program that was being worked on over some period of time to try to handle the contract issues, I guess keep track of payments and payment dates and all this kind of thing. And there was some pretty sharp criticism of the fact that apparently it was mentioned the Department of Agriculture had put something into effect with their computer system that they thought would have been very workable, and that had been turned down and disregarded by the contract division and the Department of Human Services, and that they were working their own, and it basically had something, certainly not to the monetary extent of the DMV's fiasco with the computer system, but something that for the size of it was very closely related to the same results. And of course I'd like to think that we'd learn a lesson, and especially that large would be something that would tip us off in some of our other agencies, that we really needed to get on top of those things. These are concerns that I had, and I would like to say this. I am not one that is not willing to give people second chances. I don't think that we've had change up. There's people that are in charge now that we're not. To just sit here and beat a dead horse doesn't make much sense to me, because I'd much sooner put our time in on heading forward from here. And but yet knowing that there were things that definitely needed to be addressed, and hoping that those could be part of it, while not taking all your time just trying to answer for something that you're progressing on and trying to control and gain the upper hand on yourself. And you don't need 75 people taking all your time trying to explain what happened 6 months ago.
And Mr. I appreciate that, but I appreciate you giving us some latitude, but also recognizing we do have a responsibility to follow up on and be able to articulate what we're doing, and if we're not doing it, why we're not doing it, and be able to explain that to you.
And one further thing, and I guess this really always bothers me about the government approach about not having the money and the time and the personnel and this kind of thing. When we deal with government contracts, I've never once been told, when I've had somebody question why we did something, or if we did it the right way or didn't do it or something, I've never had them, you know, if I said, well, we just didn't have the time or the money or the personnel, I've never had them say, well, you poor person, we'll see that you get a little more money to take care of this, and a few more personnel, and we'll give you another 90 days. Rather, there's fines, there's interest accrued, there's all kinds of hand-slapping going on in the process. And to me, the way we treat the people we have contracts with ought to be the same way that we approach our contracts. And I guess that is something that has frustrated me greatly in the 10 years I've been in the legislature, knowing that if I don't pay my income tax what I'm supposed to and all this kind of thing, they're not going to say and pat me on the back and say, well, we'll give you another 90 days, or we're sorry that you don't have enough, we'll just excuse it or not do it. And I have constantly agencies coming in and having said, well, we didn't have the money and the time and the personnel, and so we didn't do this. We just, well, I weren't allowed to do that under our licenses and the rules and regulations that we have to work to in private business or nonprofit business. And I would like to think that there was some kind of the same philosophy followed up on the governing agency. I thank you very much for coming, and wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Forward to working with all of you.
I know having about 180 employees was plenty for me to keep track of, so not sure I envy your job.
A lot of sleepless nights.
With times over that, but we wish you good fortune and Godspeed in getting the job done.
Hey, thank you very much.
And
don't screw up.
Don't screw up. Okay, certainly not. I'll remember that soon.
I'm sure you'll have reason to be over and talk with us further, and appreciate you giving us a little rundown here today.
Thank you.
With that, we're adjourned.
That's good business advice.